Okay, everybody, Steve Paikin here, substituting for Cheryl Jackson, who's off with the flu, unfortunately. Cheryl, we sure hope it's not H1N1, and we want to see you back quickly. But you know, they did approve the vaccine today, so maybe you should go get your shot if it's not too late. Anyway, we're here talking about technology and what influence it's having on the brains of our children. And we're here with Mike Dover and Allison Armstrong and Julie Mueller, who have been helping us for the past half hour with some good advice on what to do if you're a parent of children who are dealing with technology. And now that the television program is over, we are going to get into some sort of post-show Q&A here for the web. So, from Wilfrid Laurier University, how appropriate. Go ahead.
Hi, my question is first and foremost for Allison, but open to the panel. There are large swaths of people throughout the world and here in Canada that don't have access to the technology you've been talking about today. Are they better off than the people who do have this access to technology?
Interesting. Okay.
I'd say there's no research to support the fact that they're worse off, because it depends on what they're using to educate their children. If you have a gifted teacher and a blackboard, you're probably doing perfectly fine. If you have good books and a gifted teacher and children who are willing to learn, they're probably going to be literate, maybe even sooner than our kids, because they're more highly motivated. So I would say it's conditional on the teaching and the quality of the environments that are technology-free or computer-free.
Okay, but I got to follow up on that. We know that the poorest, worse-off people in the world are those with the least access to the internet. So how can you say that really, I think his question is, isn't it a given that we here are better off in the West than those who don't have this kind of technology?
But we may not be better off because of the technology. We may be better off because we can fund our schools and pay our teachers reasonable wages and keep our class sizes smaller. It may not be the technology that's making the difference, but rather the teaching and the quality of our teachers.
Mike, you want to follow on that?
Well, I would say it's much more likely that a gifted child that lived, say, in rural India would be able to succeed where they wouldn't have had that opportunity before, because they're able to participate in a way they haven't before in the global economy. And MIT, for example, has put all of their courseware, it's available for free on the web. So you don't get a degree from MIT, but you can audit all of their courses. And that's something we've simply never seen before. So it gives a greater opportunity to people that hadn't had it before.
Julie, a word?
Well, and the point about those people not having access to the internet, certainly in Canada, 98% of our schools are connected. And what happens is the teachers who are teaching with the technology can take a approach that's a constructivist approach, helping students be part of the world that they're learning in. So I would say that the technology is helping them.
Question here.
You were talking before about the fact that you should monitor children in their use of technology. There's a lot of parents and teachers out there who don't know what's going on in technology and aren't able to monitor it properly. And you know, there are people in teachers who don't see kids bringing up screens in the computer room, that sort of thing. Do you have any advice what those parents should do about that? Or do you think we need to have a program that helps those parents? What can they do?
Allison, you want to start? Then Julie?
I think that's very, very tough. I mean, the internet companies, the technology software companies did try to help us with that by having net nannies to make sure kids didn't stray into spaces they ought not to have. But it's a problem even in schools. I mean, I've spoken to superintendents in the UK who were having kids, you know, surf pornography sites during classroom time and in the libraries. Again, you can only monitor students, and again, it takes teachers and parents maybe to do a little education on their own to figure out how to combat this.
Julie?
And there are programs available. Local police offer programs to parents, school councils offer programs, and certainly you can use the technology to filter the technology. And something like a WebQuest a teacher can use in a classroom where they, you know, make the internet smaller and make a list of websites that children can use in their learning, because you're right, it does need to be filtered, for sure.
Question in the back of the hall, over here.
I'm surprised that none of you have made mention to the fact of the loss of social skills. My kids are a little bit older than what you're discussing, and they've completely lost social skills. You know, when you chat with someone, the body language, the communication is gone. And in that same realm, dating. You know, dating is done by internet today and by texting each other, and my kids, and I think kids in general, have lost that ability to read each other. We spent hours on the phone talking when we were dating, and now they just text each other.
How old are your children?
I have 13, 15, and 18.
You worried about this?
What?
You're a mother. You worry about everything. Okay, yeah. Sorry. What a stupid question. Okay. Okay, well, we did touch on this briefly, but yeah, the notion that some social skills are lost because of all this technology is a real fear out there. Mike, you want to address that?
Well, I think that is the case for some kids, and it would depend on the individual. In some cases, social skills actually can be enhanced. For example, the number of people somebody could influence. Unfortunately, positive and also negative ways. So it's a different sort of nuance about how you act socially. But I would say, to your point, there's a very, very important skills to have that may need to be taught more by the parents. For example, even how to use the phone properly. So when kids this age, when they get into the workplace, a lot of times they don't have the hours and hours as a teenager on the phone, or even starting your career, we have to do it all by phone, and becomes difficult to teach them. So a lot of times there's manufactured crises, either within a relationship or in a work environment, because of the lack of nuances that get picked up by body language. And that can be worse, like a fight between two adolescents in instant message just gets nastier and nastier, because you're not picking up of even the delay of how long it took for somebody to reply to them could be a great source of angst. Adding the little smiley eventually doesn't really help. Not to mention that entire conversation can be cut and pasted and sent around, where you couldn't have had that in the past. So it does make it a lot more complicated. Mm-hmm. There's certainly problems with cyberbullying we would get in for this age group that we hadn't seen before. And they're just additional problems that parents need to deal with.
Julie, on the issue of cyberbullying, Julie, what age do you start to see that kind of thing happening?
In terms of cyberbullying?
Yep.
Children as young as 7 and 8 have MSN accounts, and you're right, at that age, they haven't worked through how you deal with those conflicts in a relationship, and that's a skill that then does need to be taught.
Well, on the scale of which is worse, back in our day, you went out behind the bush at recess and you had a fist fight, and now they do it with their thumbs on, you know, their cell phones. So which is worse?
Well, I think, as Mike mentioned, it certainly is more pervasive. They can send it out across an entire school rather than out with 10 kids from the neighborhood. So it certainly, one thing that it does have is a history and evidence. So you can look back and say, here's what you said. How could you have responded to that?
Mm-hmm. Got it. Question here.
Yeah, the points were made earlier that children are keeping less in mind and are multitasking more. I'm just wondering where this leaves the development of critical thinking skills and more innovative reasoning that may require a lot of in-depth and diverse broad knowledge to be brought together in an innovative way, and may also rely on the scaffolding provided by a very capable teacher or an adult parent.
Allison, did you touch on that in your documentary?
In terms of the book on this subject, professors actually routinely say that critical thinking skills are on the decline among students. And there's a tremendous problem with scholarship, with figuring out what's accurate, what isn't. And so I don't know whether this is because of technology or it's for other reasons, but I do think that critical thinking skills are certainly something that professors say are on the decline in universities.
Yeah, Mike, what's the expression? They're surface gliders now rather than deep sea divers. Mm-hmm. So they don't know how to drill deep, but they know how to sort of skim across the surface on a lot of stuff. That doesn't sound like it's a good development.
Yeah, I think that probably was said with, you know, a fair amount of jadedness to it. There's something, if I could just jump to the defense of technology, because we focused mostly in this conversation on the internet, but if you look at gaming and really complicated games, of which, you know, most of the high-selling video games are, actually teach hypothesis skills. Because, for example, you have a finite amount of tools, some combination of which will always work. And there's really nothing wrong with learning by failure. So, for example, let's say you're playing a Madden football game, and there's a very complicated play you want to run, and it takes you 70 tries for it to work. That's fine. because you learn, well, I'm going to try something slightly different. But if you were actually playing football as a kid and you dropped the ball, they wouldn't let you have 69 tries before you actually caught it. So it does teach some skills that people are doing it for fun.
Allison, give me your view on this, on my bad parenting skills. I got a 12-year-old who plays a very violent war video game, and he's pretty good at it. And I looked at the level of violence in this game, and I just thought, this is totally age inappropriate. He told me just to cool it. But then he also managed to tell me about a dozen important battles during World War II that were being simulated during the course of this video game, and was kind of accidentally on purpose learning World War II military history while he was playing this. And I got to confess, that did impress me. So what's your view on all that?
Well, I think, you know, context is everything. If he is attracted to this game at the age of 12 and he's learning certain facts about it, that's, you know, that may be useful. Nobody doubts that going on the computer will teach facts. Whether he's going to be able to put those facts together later on and make something of them from a critical perspective, historically, join things that are important, probably depends a lot on his parents and the quality of teaching that he will get later on. So that might pique his interest, and there's nothing wrong with that. But that shouldn't be the only way in which he's learning history.
But one thing we're agreed on is that I'm probably a bad parent, right?
I doubt it.
Yeah. Anyway, you don't need to answer that. It's okay. Go ahead.
Hi. My question is regarding studies that take the best of both worlds. Are there any studies that show that if there's some good hands-on learning that's backed up with, I guess, what we're calling virtual learning here, that that's actually better than what we had in the past?
Julie?
The research, actually, the very recent research, is talking about hybrid courses. Now, this would be with university students that are more effective than a full online course or a full face-to-face course, because it does provide exactly that, the best of both worlds, that students can go online and do their readings, they can look at a presentation that a professor posts and gather those facts and have those in their head and then be able to contribute to a face-to-face discussion and analyze the readings that they've done and that sort of thing. So certainly it is more effective to capitalize on the best parts of technology and the best parts of face-to-face teaching.
Back here, please.
Well, I have a slightly different view. I would say technology is not dumbing down our kids, but rather technology is making parents look dumb. My 3-year-old nephew wakes up in the morning, puts a DVD of a documentary about hippos on, and he watches the documentary over and over again. And he has all this information about hippos, so I suppose it's the same situation with your son, where you learn by playing a video game, by watching TV all the time. And I think the parents might sort of need a better way of dealing with this new information, as opposed to trying to limit the interaction, is try to feed the information through that sort of different way of interacting with the digital world, I suppose. Hmm.
Allison, you might want a chance to comment on that. Maybe the parents are the problem, not the kids.
I mean, it could be. There's nothing wrong with watching a documentary on hippos. I think you're doing something very right if your nephew's getting up and at 3 watching a documentary program. It's terrific. He's not getting up and watching cartoons or something violent. So, I mean, that's a positive step.
Okay, finally, somebody who actually knows something about this topic. How old are you?
I am 10.
You're 10.
Mm-hmm.
What's your name?
Isaac.
Isaac, what are you doing here today?
Well, I went to my mom to go to the Q2C festival. My brother is somewhere here. not in this crowd,
does
just
going
with his class.
What do you think about all this stuff we're talking about today?
Well, I think it's very valid that kids are... Well, I think that kids are both getting smarter and not getting... getting less smart.
How are they getting smarter?
Well, because for one thing, well, me and my brother are relatively smart kids.
You're here at Q2C, that's obvious. Yeah.
My brother's actually in the gifted program, so he's in a different school.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just kind of wondering, me and my brother play video games actually quite excessively. But I don't think I'm probably one of the smartest kids in my class, and I don't see how it's making me any less smart.
What kind of video games do you play?
Well, we play mostly strategic video games, but like I control like an empire of people, and I send them out in strategic ways to conquer my enemies.
Hmm. So you'll be running for office when? No, that's good. So you're not talking about the football and the hockey video games. You're talking about something with a little more challenge to it.
Yeah.
Okay. And do you think you're getting smarter as a result of playing those video games?
Well, it's a possibility. I think it's also good parenting and lots of stimulation to make me smarter. But I think the video games could have a small factor in it.
Hmm. Do you get outside and play road hockey at all?
I don't really like hockey. Basketball is my favorite sport.
Okay, do you get outside and play basketball?
Mm-hmm.
You do that too?
Yeah.
You know it's important. You got to get outside and run around a bit.
Yeah.
Okay. Boy, if this kid's the future, I'm happy. All right. Thank you very much. That was great. Okay. Have we got anybody else? We got time for one more if we've got one. If you know what? Let's let Isaac have the last word. That was well done. Okay. Let me come up. Michael, where do you want me to close to? Opening spot? Let's go right here. Okay, we'll go over here. Anyway, that's our time. Our thanks again, Mike Dover, Allison Armstrong, Julie Mueller. You can catch this Q&A session along with the discussion, Is Technology Dumbing Down Our Kids? At the following website, tvoparents.com. Glad you could be with us. I'm Steve Paikin. Until next time.